I welcome you to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Bible, and invite you to join me in Daniel chapter number 7, where we're going to pick up the story in verse number 15 in just a moment. We got started on this vision of Daniel last week, and it is all taking place in the 540s BC. We don't know exactly when. I guess somewhere right around 549 BC. And what's significant about that is it means that Daniel has been in Babylon something like 57 years now. So he is clearly a long-standing leader of the Jewish people in Babylon. And he is also the great prophet that has been around for a while. This also means that we're about 39 years past the destruction of Jerusalem. And Daniel is looking forward by now to the finish of the 70 years of desolation for the country of Judah. That was what Jeremiah the prophet had been told. And so Daniel knows that within not too much longer, another 13, 14 years, the time out for the Jewish people should be over with. But then he has this dream. And this dream probably reminds him a little bit of the dream that he interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar at the very beginning of his time in Babylon. Because there, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream of a four-layered or four-leveled statue or image, and Daniel was able to reveal to him, these are four kingdoms that are coming up. Here, Daniel has a vision of four strange beasts coming up out of the sea, and he may already suspect that these are those four kingdoms again, and he wants to know, more than likely, how does the restoration of Judah, the end of the exile, fit in to this terrifying vision, especially that fourth beast, because as we'll see in a moment, he's really focused in on that fourth beast. Daniel chapter 7, verse 15. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. So you can tell he's not at peace with what he's seeing here, and he wonders what it all means. Verse 16, I approached one of those who stood there, certainly an angelic being, and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he wants an interpretation. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. These four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth. So four kings, four kingdoms, that certainly ties it back to the Nebuchadnezzar dream from chapter number 2. But, the angelic being goes on to say, the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. So that's good news. And Daniel is certainly going to be happy to know that this all eventually is resolved in the establishment of the eternal kingdom. And back in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, you remember how that was represented. A stone cut out of the mountain without human hands comes rolling down, crashes into the image, and pulverizes it. And then that stone grows into a huge mountain, which becomes the kingdom of eternity. So that vision back in chapter number 2 provides a backdrop for Daniel's own vision, which terminates, which finishes up with good news that the saints of the Most High are going to be in that eternal kingdom once everything is settled. However, That still leaves the four scary beasts between Daniel's time and then. Now, the four beasts are, I think, easily enough paralleled with the four kingdoms of Daniel chapter number 2. The lion with wings, that was an image associated with Isis, Ishtar, the goddess of fertility there in Babylon. In fact, you see multiple representations of these winged lions on the ancient walls of Babylon, and especially the Ishtar Gate, which was named after Ishtar. So it is clear that the first animal is Babylon. And you remember it had its wings plucked, and it was stood up like a man, and it got all full of itself. And that's certainly the way the Babylonian kingdom is going to end. And we know that the first kingdom in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the image, the head of gold, was definitely Babylon. So I think we've got a one-for-one correlation there. The second beast was a lopsided bear that was eating up meat, being invited to eat up meat. And I think that we can just as easily make that bear the Medo-Persian Empire, which is just now on the horizon for Daniel. The Medo-Persian Empire is a lopsided empire, and we'll see that in an explanation later, because it has the Medes come up first, but they are associated with their close neighbors, the Persians, who come up next, and then the Persians kind of eclipse the Medes in this alliance between the Medes and the Persians. And so that's what makes the bear lopsided. It's the Medo-Persian Empire. And it certainly went out at God's invitation and chewed up at least three countries, but certainly put a big dent in the Babylonian Empire. It took it over. So I think, again, we've got a one-for-one correlation with the statue, because we know the silver chested area with the two arms, two shoulders, was the Medo-Persians who came next after Babylon. The third beast in this vision, you may remember, was a strange-looking four-headed leopard with four wings. And we know that when the Persian Empire came to an end, it was because of Alexander the Great, who swept over the Middle East with the speed of a cheetah, of a leopard. And he also had his kingdom, after his own demise, split up into four distinctive empires. And so the number four is very important to the understanding of the Greek Empire of Alexander the Great. We have an added bonus that we know that the Greek peoples thought of Alexander the Great in the terms of a god who went off to the east and came back with great gifts for the people of Greece. And this god is pictured coming home on a chariot drawn by leopards, or sometimes riding on a leopard. So even the leopard part of this vision of the beast is tied in with the Greeks associated with Alexander the Great. So I think we've got now another correlation. So that's 3 for 3 with the statue. Because the Medo-Persians, the Silver Empire, was replaced with the Bronze Empire of the Macedonian Greeks. And we even know that the Greeks used a lot of bronze weaponry. And so that only leaves beast number 4, which is the one that Daniel is most interested in. And I think we can just go ahead and make our correlation now with Daniel chapter 2. The fourth beast, or the, excuse me, the fourth empire of the statue was certainly the Roman Empire. And the Romans are associated with iron, just like the statue was iron, which then ends up having a little clay mixed in toward the feet. So I think we've now got four clear correlations between Daniel chapter 7 with the four beasts and Daniel chapter 2, the four layers of the statue. So let's talk about beast number 4 and see how it doesn't just simply talk about the Roman Empire that existed when the Messiah came into the world the first time, but it also seems to tie into the empire of the beast that is in the book of Revelation that will be in place when Jesus comes the second time. So here we go. Daniel chapter 7, verse 19. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying, with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, and which devoured in broken pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. And about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up, and before which 3 of them fell. The horn that had eyes and a mouth that it spoke great things and that seemed greater than its companions. You remember earlier in this vision, Daniel saw 10 horns on this last beast, this fourth beast's head. And those horns, 3 of them, got shoved out of the way by an 11th horn that comes up. And that 11th horn suddenly gets a mouth and it has eyes and it starts talking down God until judgment comes on it. And so Daniel wants to know, how does that all play out? I want to know how this fourth beast is going to be dealt with in its assault upon God and God's people. Because now we even read this, verse 21. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them. So not only does this braggadocious horn attack the saints of God, it actually gets away with it for a while. Looks like it's winning. Now, this is where we have a very clear connection to the book of Revelation. Revelation chapter number 13, where it's describing and explaining the seven-headed, ten-horned beast that is in power right before Jesus returns. It says this, "The beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words." So just like the horn in Daniel 7, the beast of Revelation 13 is very full of itself and bragging. Continuing in the text from Revelation 13, "It was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. Now, 42 months is 3.5 years on the Jewish calendar. So keep that in mind. "It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God." Now here in Daniel chapter 7, it's the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man that we have representing God that this horn is talking against. So Revelation 13 is telling the same story. "It was blaspheming his name and his dwelling," that is, those who dwell in heaven, so the saints that are already with the Lord, "and also it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them." You hear that? Let me read from the Daniel passage again. "This horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them." Now let's read the Revelation passage again. "It was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them." That is very synonymous wording in our English Bibles. In the Greek Old Testament, it is almost all the exact same words and even the same forms of those words between the two passages. There is a synonym that's used for conquering rather than prevailing. But other than that, it's pretty much the same wording. So this is talking about the same thing. So we have a close connection between Daniel chapter 7 and Revelation chapter 13. And so we are actually talking about these same events here. This horn in Daniel chapter 7 is going to cause trouble right before the second coming of Jesus in the book of Revelation. Verse 22 in our Daniel 7 passage says, "Until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom." So the reign of this beast leader in Revelation, or the reign of this braggadocious horn in Daniel chapter 7, that reign of terror ends when the Ancient of Days, God the Father, hands everything over to the Son of Man who is coming in glory. We saw that just a few verses back in chapter 7 of Daniel. And so that's the second coming of Jesus. And when the second coming of Jesus happens, he will rule in favor of his resurrected and transformed saints. In fact, the book of Revelation talks about how they will rule and reign with him first for 1,000 years, but then into eternity future. Verse 23. "Thus he said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, which it shall devour the whole earth and trample it down and break it to pieces." And if you didn't see it on your own, pay attention there that it says here that these kings are also kingdoms. And the fourth kingdom is the one that's going to cause all the trouble for the saints at the tail end of its reign. And it will have 10 horns at the tail end of its existence. Verse 24, "As for the 10 horns out of this kingdom, 10 kings shall arise." That is also in the book of Revelation, chapter number 17 this time, when John the Apostle is given the decoding of the great scarlet beast of chapter 13. So here's Revelation 17, verses 12 through 14. "The 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received royal power." So the kings of Daniel 7 and the kings of Daniel 13 and, excuse me, of Revelation 13 and Revelation 17 have not yet come to power when John is given his apocalyptic vision. They are for the future. In fact, it's the future immediately before the second coming of Jesus Christ. Back to Revelation 17. "They are able to receive authority as kings for 1 hour." Now, that's not like 60 minutes on the clock. This is John's way in other places of talking short period of time. "They're to receive authority as kings for 1 hour or a short period of time together with the beast." That's our braggadocious horn from chapter 7 of Daniel, but the beast leader of chapter 13 Revelation. "These are of one mind, and they hand over their authority and power and authority to the beast. They will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful." So these final 10 kings are going to join forces with the final beast leader, who is the 11th horn, and they will try to take Jesus down. They will try to stop him from coming as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. and they will lose. Now, Daniel 7:24 goes on to say, another shall arise after them, so that's the 11th horn. He shall be different from the former ones and shall put down three kings. Now, we can only speculate about most of the specifics here. We don't know whether or not that means that of those lasting kings, the 11th king kills three of them and then takes over their authority, or does he somehow compromise them in such a way that they must give their authority to him? Or are they backing him because of some sort of hold he has on them so that they throw their support behind him and that makes him the senior member of this group of leaders in this end-time kingdom? I don't know which of this is going to be the accurate way of describing this. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But it is clear that he shoves aside in some form or fashion three of the original ten in this final world government. Verse 25. Back about the beast leader or the horn leader, the 11th horn. He shall speak words against the Most High. We keep hearing that. He shall wear out the saints of the Most High. This idiom, wear out, is very similar to an English idiom we have, which is rub a person out. You rub them out, which means you're getting rid of them. You're killing them. And so this guy, this final ruler, is going to go after the people of God. And he is going to be successful in rubbing out a bunch of them, killing, disposing of a whole bunch of them. But he will also, it says here, think to change the times and the law. Now, times and law are references to the calendar and to the legal system. And so my anticipation is that this guy is going to want a fresh start in his final world kingdom. And so he will not be happy with a calendar that's based still to this day on Christianity. Even though they've shifted the terminology to before Common Era and Common Era, it's still the dividing point that has been used for centuries of BC, before Christ, and AD, Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord. And so I have every expectation that he'll want to get away from that. And anything on the calendar that's related to Christianity is going to also be a no-no for him. Anything religious at all that's related to the Bible will be a big no-no, and he'll want to change that. And then, of course, the law. It'll be his way or the highway or the execution chamber. So he will change things to be his sovereign leadership. And because of that, they shall be given to his hand for a time, times, and half a time. So he will be a very big and powerful leader for 3.5 years. The time, times, and half a time here is a Hebrew expression. Time is singular. Times is dual, which means two times. And then half a time. So you got 3.5 times. And we just associate that with 3.5 years because in the book of Revelation, you find this exact wording in Revelation 12:14 about the final moments before Jesus comes back as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. It's 3.5 times. But that's a 3.5 year period expressed as 42 months or 1,260 days under the ministry of the two witnesses of God, which is just 10 days short of any 3.5 year Jewish period. Any 3.5 year period on a Jewish calendar is 1,270 days long. So everything is pointing from the book of Revelation chapter 7 straight forward in time to the book of Revelation and the final period of time, final 3.5 years before Jesus comes back. Verse 26, the court shall sit in judgment, that's God's court, and his dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed to the end. That is the dominion of the braggadocious horn, the 11th horn, the beast leader of the book of Revelation. All of that is going to be terminated for him. Revelation 19:20, which comes hot on the heels of a description of Jesus arriving as King of Kings and Lord of Lords in the air, in the clouds. Revelation 19:20 then describes how the beast leader and his pet false prophet are captured, and then they are thrown alive into the lake of fire, which is hell. And they are probably given permanent bodies before that happens, so that they will be there for eternity. Verse 27. And then the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, and their kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions shall serve and obey them. Now, what do we see next in the book of Revelation? After the destruction of the beast leader, after the arrival of Jesus as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, we see the millennium. We see the thousand-year reign of Jesus and his resurrected and transformed saints. So everything in this chapter lines up perfectly with the book of Revelation and the descriptions there. Verse 28, let's wrap it up. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, my color changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. So he keeps it private because it is just so overwhelming.